Hello, you have a prepaid call from an inmate at the Michigan Department of Corrections. If you feel you are being victimized or extorted by this inmate, please call GTL Customer Service.
From Northern California, it's the PenPals.Buzz Prison Pen Pal Podcast. Hear real stories from real inmates who want to write to you. Now, here's your host, Big Steve.
By the way, that's the first time I've talked to thousands of people in prison, and I've never heard that message. If you feel you're being extorted, I'm not calling, man. I'm not ratting you out. I promise. Rick Strong is with us, G. Robert Cotton Correctional Facility in Michigan. You can find him on JPay number 253763. You can also go to pinpals.buzz and search for Richard Strong. There's some cool pictures of you, man. I saw you sporting that Armani Exchange, and man, you got the cap and gown going on, man. I love that. It's a good profile. You guys got to check it out if you're hearing this. And Rick, I'm glad you're able to find a phone. You have to start early, right?
We have to use actual phones, and it's long lines. So whenever I can get in, I should try to get in.
Oh no, I appreciate it. I was getting here as quick as I could. I got here. We're on the West Coast, so it's 6:21 in the morning here. I'm glad you could call. It was pretty cool because my wife works like at 6 a.m. So I'm like, well, I'll drop you off at work, then I can get in on Saturday. And this guy Richard Strong, he's supposed to be calling. Thanks for finding time for us, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys.
What's just kind of tell everybody your story, kind of what you're looking for here with PenPals.Buzz, and we'll go from there, man.
Okay, well, I've currently been incarcerated since 2012. I actually was wrongfully convicted. I've been fighting to prove my innocence and for my freedom since 2012. In 2011, a guy was tragically shot and killed outside of a nightclub, and I was arrested for it about 6 months later in Raleigh, North Carolina, and extradited back, charged with it. No physical evidence connected me to the crime. There never was a gun found. They found 3 bullet shell casings with none of my fingerprints or DNA on them. And there was 2 alleged witnesses that didn't know me. I've never seen them before. They picked my picture out of a 6-pack photo lineup. And then it came out later that they changed their story multiple times and actually implicated other people. But I still was convicted. And since a natural life sentence here in Michigan, I've been fighting ever since. I passed 2 polygraph tests. I've got an alibi affidavit. We found photo evidence that, you know, disproves one of the witnesses' theories, but still fighting.
They use that polygraph so many times to try to convict people and say, oh, he won't even take a polygraph. And then when you take one and you pass the polygraph and you pass the polygraph a second time, and then they're like, well, that doesn't really matter.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. But it seems like when they get locked onto a certain theory, anything that is exculpatory to that theory, they don't want to pay attention to, and they kind of just discard it. So my first couple years in prison, I was kind of in a dark place and depressed. Mm-hmm. But I found that I had to find a way to still be positive and still try to find a life while I was in here. So while I was in segregation in the hole back in, I think it was 2013, I made a conscious decision to change my life. So I enrolled in college. They have college programs available here. I ended up earning an associate's degree in liberal arts, an associate's degree in general studies, and a certification for public administration and management. And then I went further with my education. I've just earned my bachelor's degree in business administration. So, you know, I've run programs in there. I'm working with an organization called Chance for Life, where we, you know, deal with cognitive reframing and helping prisoners reform and rehabilitate. And I'm also vice president of an organization called National Lifers of America, where we do a lot of criminal justice advocation and put together rallies and work on, you know, legislation, trying to get laws changed, work on, you know, giving people second chances.
That's great, and helping people maybe that the next guy that comes along that's in your same situation that gets mispicked out of a lineup, right, from a photo lineup, which they say is like the worst. Like the least reliable evidence, too, which is sad.
That's the craziest part about it. They say that's the least credible evidence that you can have, but yet it's, you know, what they use, and no physical evidence. And even in my trial, the prosecutor stated there was no motive for me to have committed this crime because I didn't know the victim and he didn't know me. So,
man, Richard, I'm going to need. I'm going to need some cognitive reframing because this stuff gets me so angry. And I really need to get out that workbook where it says, you know, you change your thoughts, then you change your feelings, and then you change your actions. Cause I just get so frustrated. Yeah. My wife and I were just watching this whole Stephen Avery thing. And I mean, and if you watch that, you just see clear as day how screwed up this justice system is, if you want to call it that. And and that's why we started penpals.buzz, because even if people did do something or they didn't, there's a lot of guys in there that shouldn't be, and a lot of them that get sentenced for them. We got a guy that sold an ounce of marijuana and got like 17 and a half year sentence for that. So it's like,
wow,
some of this stuff's just ridiculous.
And it's legal here in Michigan now.
Right? Yeah,
marijuana is legal in Michigan.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? It was less than an ounce, but I'll get off of that because I go down a rabbit hole of frustration.
Yeah.
You're 50 now, is that right? And you've been there about 13-ish years?
Yeah, 14 years, yeah. I came in at 36, just turned 36, and I'm 50 now. So I've been in there going on for a little over 14 years.
And we'll give out your – so it's Richard Strong, 253-763. You're at G. Robert Cotton Correctional Facility. That's is that your address there? Is 3500 North Elm, Jackson, Michigan?
Yep.
49201.
49201.
Or JPay. JPay is where people need to go to reach you because it's faster and better and easier, I'm sure.
Yeah, JPay makes things a lot easier. With the snail mail, you know, it takes a while. Now they have a system set up. They have to copy all letters, so it can even be more delayed.
Yeah.
JPay, and JPay people can send pictures, and it's easier. And we could send e-cards to each other and things like that. That's one thing I know about being in prison. That in prison, we deeply appreciate any love and support we can get from people out there because, you know, it's sad to see a lot of guys in here just, you know, that have changed and are actually trying to do something to give back and be more assets to the society than, you know, burdens or liabilities, but they don't have the support of the community because, you know, the narrative that's been placed on them, they're being judged by the worst moment of their life and not the sum of all the experiences of their life. And people just want that chance to try to, you know, connect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's part of humanity. I think that's why segregation is seen, you know, segregation, what they call it, the whole, is seen as such a punishment to people because it cuts you off from communication with other human beings. And that's a natural thing to human beings, that we reach out and communicate with others. So I think your organization is doing a great service in doing that for people in there. Because there's a lot of guys in there that are good people that just made bad choices.
Yeah. Uh-oh, somebody's angry.
Yeah, the officer trying to just call the yard.
I thought she's like, Big Steve, shut the hell up. I thought she was yelling at me. That's my PTSD from my... I did 11 years in there, too. I know exactly what... I only spent... One time I spent three...
You know, yeah.
I spent 3 weeks in SEG, and... oh, God, that was the worst time. And they put me in there, and they didn't tell me why. They said it's an investigation. I still don't know why.
Exactly.
And so every day, I'm like, what the hell's going on? Did somebody, you know... put in some false so every day was just like terrifying and like you said, there's no the only human connection I had was like when the guy came to my slot in the door and handed me my breakfast. That was like
that's it.
And there was no back then, I don't know now, we had no TVs, no radios, they didn't let us get our mail. I mean, it was rough. Some like Stephen King book we could get out of a rack, but the pages were ripped out of it, right? So I get that.
That's
like,
crazy. That's like exactly how it is.
So important and human connection. I mean, even if it's human connection with a bunch of guys, you think I normally wouldn't want to connect or hang out with these guys, but it makes a big difference just having somebody to share something with.
That's the ironicness of this situation I think I find myself in that makes it kind of hard to deal with the balance of that. I'm never alone. Like, you're constantly surrounded by people. I'm on the phone right now. There's people around me talking. I go to the bathroom. There's people right there. Shower, brush your teeth, wash your face. There's people right there. Never alone, but I'm always lonely because I don't have real connections with the people in here because I don't know them and they don't know me. So that's a weird irony to it.
I always feel like, and one of the reasons I wanted to get penpals.buzz off the ground a few years ago is just the actual idea of a handwritten letter, and I guess now a lot of them are on JPay, but a long letter, you can connect. I mean, I connected with people I didn't even know, and I felt closer to them than I did with my own, you know, real-life friends and family in a lot of ways. Because you're telling them things that you haven't told anybody, and they're doing the same. A lot of the people on the streets, they need help too, and the guys inside can help them. They have a lot of things going on. They're going through divorces. They're going through mental health problems, and I feel like it's just such a great way to be able to help each other through these rough times, man. That's so hard to get to wrap my head around a life sentence, and especially when you didn't even do it. You said at age 37, you got in there for a couple of years, and you started to change. You started to change your life. What was it that you wanted to change about yourself specifically once you were in?
I was raised in a good home. My father and my mother divorced when I was young, but my mother was a good mother, good Christian woman. And, you know, around when my father passed away when I was 14, I kind of went through some depression and some, you know, trauma behind that. And I kind of chose to hang out in the streets and, you know, a lot of bad influences. So I started selling drugs at an early age, around 16 years old. And was going in and out of jail for selling drugs and, you know, getting caught with guns and things of that nature. Started drinking and, you know, stuff like that. So I started to make the changes, you know, right before I was incarcerated. I started going to college then while I was still in society. And then just, you know, like I said, by the bad luck of it, I get caught up in this situation. And that's when I realized, even though I wasn't, you know, in the streets anymore, I wasn't hustling, I wasn't selling drugs anymore, I still was around that type of environment, you know, that could even get my name implicated in something like this.
Yeah.
So that's when I said, I got to just change everything. I got to make a conscious decision to stop being about me and start trying to be, what use can I be to other people? How can I find my purpose? You know, my God-given purpose is just my purpose in life, period, to help people. And I think getting knowledge of self and learning about who I really am, my strengths and my weaknesses, and just tuning into that and promoting my strengths and discipline, my weaknesses, has helped me become who I am now. And like I said, I've done a lot of in here since I've been in it. It's helped a lot of people.
Look at all this stuff you're doing. I mean, you got the degrees, the tutoring. It says you're mentoring inmates, too, who are having a hard time adjusting. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good thing just to get them on the right track, which takes someone that's been there to be able to do that. You can't just have some teacher doing that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What can we do, I mean, to help? I obviously will get your story out there, and maybe, I mean, things are kind of crazy there in Michigan now with all the political stuff going on, but maybe somebody can hear the story and take another look. But as far as, like, pen pals, what type of person would you like to have reach out to you if they're listening?
I'm really looking for any type of assistance I can get, as far as just anybody that would, you know, could help me in this fight to prove my innocence. But as far as, like, companionship or meeting somebody, I'd like to meet somebody that's, you know, shares the same interests as me. I'm intellectual, but also, like I said, I can also relate to, you know, people that have been through adversity and struggle. And so anybody that just, you know, wants somebody that can be there to support them mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and somebody that can be here for me in the same way, that's what I'm looking to connect with. You know, a woman that can understand my story and, you know, help me on my journey moving forward.
We're talking to Richard Strong today. He's at the G. Robert Cotton Correctional Facility in Jackson, Michigan. You can get in touch with him on JPay.com or the JPay app. Just enter his number. It's 253-763, State of Michigan. And you'll see Richard Strong pop up. You can send him a message and say, "Hi, I heard you on the Prison Pen Pal podcast with Big Steve." That's what we do here each and every day, each and every week on the podcast, and every day at penpals.buzz. We're connecting free world people with incarcerated people. We're helping incarcerated men and women find friendships, find connections in the world so that they're not just stuck talking to their cellmate. You know who else makes connections is our friend R-Dub over at Sunday Night Slow Jams. Man, if you haven't heard this show, you've got to check it out. He's on hundreds of radio stations around the world. He's probably on a station near you. Go to slowjams.com and you can learn all about the show and how they, too, have spent decades keeping people connected over the radio. You'll hear a lot of friends and family members of incarcerated people giving what they call oral expressions, what we used to call shout-outs, letting them know, "Hey, I'm still waiting for you, baby. I can't wait till you get home." Lots of great messages go out on Sunday Night Slow Jams and some pretty amazing music, too. Check it out at slowjams.com, all right? We'll be back with Richard Strong. Hear more from him in about 20 seconds.
You ever feel stuck, bored out of your mind? Try something original. like sending letters through the mail to open-minded people worldwide. Write to penpals.buzz, P.O. Box 456, Anderson, California, 96007. Penpals.buzz.
Yeah, that's B-U-Z-Z. Richard Strong's with us. Richard, we had to have him spell that out because, believe it or not, we get a lot of mail. You know, they hear the radio commercial and they'll send a letter to penpals.mud. And that's, and sometimes the letters don't come through. So yeah, we had to pay a few dollars extra for the B-U-Z-Z, the extra second of airtime, but well worth it. I'm telling you, well worth it. And Richard, man, I want to go back to just briefly, because I think it's important. The concept that you put forward a little earlier and in your profile that people shouldn't be judged by their mistakes or by their biggest mistake even. And I always, and I've said this a lot of times, but it's like, you know, you read a book and maybe one page of the book sucks, but the rest of the book's amazing. And you can't just judge the whole book by that one page, but that's essentially what happens in this system. That one really bad page is what becomes your pre-sentence investigation. That's the only thing brought up at trial, you know.
Yeah.
So your entire life now is that one shitty page of the book.
Yeah.
And it seems like people are becoming, like, on one sense, people are becoming more tolerant. It seems like they're more accepting. And I keep thinking, oh, maybe things are going to improve.
People really are seeking convictions and not actually justice or the truth, which I think is a shame because you're not even giving justice to the victim's family member because they don't have the real person that committed this crime incarcerated.
Yeah,
and it's not giving any protection to society because that person could still be out hurting other people. So it's like, what's really going on out there is what I got to ask.
I have to think that the victim's family members, even them, they might be fooling themselves and thinking, yeah, I think that's the guy that did it. But I think deep down, a lot of times they know in their heart. And I bet even in your case, they know, like, this probably isn't the guy, you know, but they have to do something to feel better. So they just lie to themselves, I think, in a lot of cases. And they're just like, oh, yeah, we solved it. It's done. Just because they don't want to have to deal with the trauma of it.
You know, closure, and I understand it, and I empathize completely with the victim's family because, you know, I know it's a pain that can never be replaced to lose, you know, a son or a father or brother.
Yeah.
And I feel really bad for them. I actually, my ex-wife's son was murdered a few years ago, so I saw the traumatic effect it had on her and it had on me and everybody else. I know it's a grief that's unexplainable, so I deeply empathize with their family. And at the same time, I think, like you said, I agree with you, they know because the victim's father, in this case, he actually did an interview with my private investigator. I've had been working on my case over the last 14 years, and he told the investigator that he knows I didn't commit this crime.
Oh,
and
wow.
He gave my investigator actually names of people he believes committed it, but said the police never looked into it. So it's a whole thing. It seemed like it's something out of a movie.
Man.
But it's my life, and it's tragedy.
You don't want to be the star of that movie, man. I was reading a little during our break, and it was your change.org petition. And anyone who wants to, you know, learn more about that situation, just change.org and search for your name, Richard Strong or Rick Strong in there. Mm-hmm. It talked about your 97% on the polygraph and all these things.
Yeah.
I can relate on this, but it mentioned that you were told by your public defender not to testify at the trial. And
I actually did get to testify. The ironicness of what happened was my public defender came to see me the whole time I was in the county jail and was like, you should testify, you're articulate, your story needs to be told.
Uh-huh.
He's telling me this the whole time. And then when we get to trial and they say, okay, the prosecutors can rest, the defense can, you know, begin their case. I said, okay, you know, who are you going to call as witnesses? And am I going to be, are you going to call me to testify? He said, oh, hold on one second. And he stands up in front of the judge and he makes a statement saying, I want to go on record that I'm advising my client not to testify.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Like, what? You've been telling me for a year to testify. So the judge actually sent us out into the back and said, I want you guys to discuss what you want to do. So we go to the back. And I'm like, well, what's going on? You just been told me for the last year you want me to testify. And he says, well, now I'm advising you not to. I'm like, well, what defense are you going to present? He basically said, I'm going straight to closing arguments.
Yeah.
I said, what? What is going on here? So I said, I want to testify.
Right, yeah.
So he says, well, okay. He actually tells me to give him a list of questions to ask me. I'm not a lawyer, so I write down like 10 questions for him to ask me. my own questions, you know, and he puts me on the stand and holds a piece of paper and reads off 10 questions that I gave him. So it was just like, it was just ridiculous, but that's what happened.
Wow. Well, I guess, don't know. I spent all those years and I rewind the trial and I think, what if this and what if that? And then at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't, the what ifs don't matter because here I am. Oh, that just, I'm getting frustrated. I got to calm down. Hang on. Let me have some water here for a second. Oh, that's good. Hey, you wrote this great blog on empathy that's on penpals.buzz now, too. Mm-hmm. Just want to read a little excerpt and hear your thoughts on it. Empathy is the ability to put yourself in another person's shoes. When we're able to do that, we can understand why people have made some of the choices, good or bad, that they made in life. Then we stop judging and stop criticizing and start listening and loving. Our eyes and hearts begin to open, and we see that we have more in common than we have different. The hardest journey a person can take is inward, but when we do, we obtain the greatest knowledge you can achieve, the knowledge of self. And when you truly learn yourself, then you can truly love yourself. And when you can love yourself the right way, you can love someone else the right way. I loved reading that. You said life is a journey meant to be traveled by two, and you hope to find the right woman in the right way. And I'm hoping that the Prison Pen Pal podcast is the right way to find Rick Strong, the right woman. Yeah. You already know he's an empathetic guy, intelligent. He's a good dresser. You've got a great smile. You can see his pictures at penpals.buzz. And you've been there for way too long.
14 years, yeah. 14 years too long. It's a whole different thing when you're serving time for something you didn't do. Like I said, in my youth when I was making bad choices, I did some time, a little bit of time, county jail time, a small stint in prison, like a year. And it was, I just came in and just started to do my time. And it was, you get your commissary, you work out, you try to stay out of trouble and come home. But it's, you don't complain too much about it because you're supposed to be in there, even if you don't want to be there. But in this situation, it's torture. Every day, I have to deal with the things of, the oppression from the correction officers, the being surrounded by people that don't have the best hygiene or the best attitudes and things like that. It just weighs on you because I know I'm not supposed to be here because I didn't do anything wrong. So it's like, it gets harder going through it alone, when I've lost a lot of people over the 14 years. I've had family members pass, uncles, my grandmother passed, a couple grandparents passed actually. And I've had friends, so-called friends I thought were friends, kind of abandon me. And to sit here and to see people leave, either through death or just not being able to hold on, it's hard. So to have somebody that could be there and just, like I said, mostly connect with and be supportive would be a blessing to me, and definitely a blessing I wouldn't take for granted.
Oh, man, that's I'm sorry to hear. That's the hardest thing when you're just there helpless and people, loved ones in your life pass away. And I think the only, positive thing is I'm sure the people that really knew you, your family, your real friends, they knew the truth. I'm sure they stood by you and they felt bad that this was happening. And I'd hope at least that your true friends, there's none of them thinking, I wonder if he really did it, because I wouldn't want a friend like that if they were. But I mean, people that would know you would know.
Speaking on behalf of others, though, even those that are guilty in here, because I've got, good relationships with some guys in here that, Michigan just passed this, well, it was actually nationwide, but Michigan just adopted it now, this juvenile lifer law, where the brain science shows now that brains don't fully develop until the age of 26 years old. So they've been resentencing guys that caught, murder cases and got life sentences that were under the age of 20.
Okay.
And there's some guys here that have been locked up since they're 17 years old, and now they're 49, 50 years old. But these are some of nicest, kindest guys I've ever met, and intelligent, and they're doing everything they can to try to give back to the community in here and out there. So even some of the guys that have, actually made that horrible mistake of taking a life are now trying to do something to save a life or to give back. I believe that they deserve second chances as well. So
from my experience, some of the people with the quote-unquote worst crimes, murder, violent crimes, terrible crimes, they were the most kind and peaceful and decent guys that I met inside. And then some of the worst guys we called the shit sticks, they were in there for, you know, a low-level mm-hmm. drug offense or a burglary or something. Yep. So it's really like you really can't. I mean, I guess you can. People do judge, but it's really so much better just to get to know the person and mm-hmm. what their circumstance was and actually take the time to hear their story. And I think being their pen pal is a heck of a good way to do that, man, because you can.
That's why I think Pen Pals Buzz is a great organization and a great system you're using here, because you're giving voice to the voiceless, because that's what many people here want, is still be heard. Because it's like literally like being a ghost in here, you know.
You have 1 minute.
You can reach out to the outside world, but it's
remaining.
It feels like you're in a tomb in here. You know, it's like you're dead, but you're not dead. You know, you can't participate with the world, but you can sometimes communicate with it. So we just want to be, you know, we want the people to know that we're still alive in here. We do have a voice. We do want to help. You know, everybody's not trying to take advantage of somebody out there. We want to give back and be supportive in any way we can be as well. So I thank you for this opportunity, and I appreciate your organization, what you're doing, and knowing that you serve time yourself, you're doing a great service, and I know you'll be blessed because of it. So I appreciate you.
It's lockdown time for Big Steve, but he'll be back soon with another edition of the penpals.buzz prison pen pal podcast. To be a guest on our show, email podcast@penpals.buzz or call 888-2-PENPAL. PenPals.Buzz is a division of SnapTura Inmate Services.